LSG Media presents the Walking Dead Podcast. Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Dean, and joining me is the wonderfully talented and incredibly handsome Matthew Anderson.
Holy shit.
Mr. Matthew Anderson, how you doing today, my friend?
I'm good. Good. A little bit stuffy from beginnings of a cold. I hope it's a short-lived one.
You stuffy? You want me to make you chicken soup?
Oh, please.
You want some chicken soup?
That sucks, man. I wish you weren't feeling bad. It makes me sad for you. I hope you get better. Keep drinking that vitamin C.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get you through.
I'll live.
But be careful of the pantry, because you might get turned away. Because of the shortening of the rations.
We're all out of chicken soup.
Yeah. So, The Walking Dead now. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 44 minutes. 44 action-packed minutes this week.
We promised you we weren't going to slow down for episode one, and we like to think we kept that promise.
Yeah. We're just...
Oh, my God.
We are just pedal to the fucking metal. This moved kind of like at a Fury Road pace, I noticed.
Relentless, action-packed, lots of brow furrowing.
I was really hoping that Rick climbed the gate and just yelled, "Witness me," and dove over. But no such luck.
With two spears akimbo.
Or maybe Spencer jumps off the gate with an explosive spear over his head and just blows up all the walkers or something.
Arrow sticking out of his forehead.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, he will not ride Eternal in Valhalla. He'll just pout on the gate for a while and eat crackers like fucking Samwise Gamgee. What's going on, dude? All right, so The Walking Dead now. I think we're making it pretty clear what our initial impressions are, but for shits and giggles, Matthew, take it away.
Well, we talked a little bit last time about the last episode, the Morgan-centric one being a kind of a slowdown episode. Well, that was still going at a breakneck speed in comparison, I would say, to this episode. And I don't hate this episode, but it's not as entertaining, I would say. It's not as much of a thrill ride. And we've talked about this before. It's like this is one of their necessary ramp down of an episode. And yep. I would say the most interesting thing so far out of this one is the Aaron and Maggie stuff. That's like the only parts I was really tuned into as much.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking probably the Ron and Carl stuff was really gripping.
That was, yeah, you know what? I take back everything I already said. Yeah. I want this to be the Ron and Carl duo hour.
Yeah, surely, surely.
Jesus.
So yeah, sort of downshifting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just a part of me, too, that wants to see them do kind of what they did in the first episode of this show. Whereas, you know, that kept up this really amped up present timeline, you know, going back and forth between a couple days prior, which was a lot slower. And I was thinking by the end of this, especially by the end of my second viewing, of like, why couldn't we have had a character story, a character arc on the outside of the wall, like Glenn or like Sasha and Abraham, and then coming back to some of the slower, moments inside the walls. Like, we can juxtapose those back and forth within the same episode. We don't always have to have a fast episode versus a slow episode. Like, that, we can mix them.
I'll tell you.
I don't know.
Would you like to know why?
Oh, please.
Because the showrunners are Eastman, and the episode pacing is Tabitha, and they're milking the shit out of it. Just squeezing that goat teat, squirting a little bit at a time into that bucket, just taking
not
their sweet time. Hopefully it does not end like Tabitha ended, but I'm afraid it may still end in death.
God, you would think that at this rate they're making literal money, or like per clickbait money off of every Tumblr gif of Glenn at the dumpster, like dragging out the conspiracy theory.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as you can see here, the suspect fell towards the north side of the and the fucking CSI guys and all this other bullshit. I don't know.
Can't see their rotation in the air as Nicholas and Glenn spiral off the dumpster.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I think we got a serial problem here. I don't know why these guys are from fucking Boston all of a sudden, but they are, you know. I think what happens is he falls off the dumpster, crawls underneath, uses a chicken bone to fend the other ones off. I don't know. It's the fucking shit people come up with. Like, the elevation in the dumpster seems to be sufficient for Glenn, who is Asian. And we know that typically Asians are of small frame, and he could possibly slip underneath. And good, I'm God. Just like, God, I can't do it. Just can't do it.
I want resolution just for these theories to stop.
Right? Yes. At this point, I'm like, just make him dead, because to be honest with you,
I don't even want to see him after this.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's hop right to the beginning of this bad mamma jamma, right?
Well, here we are. Deanna, so, looking great.
Yeah, Lady Skeletor, as she's been known. climbs the wall, looks around. Her face basically tells me she's losing her shit, and she's kind of overhearing Michonne, Tara, and Maggie talk about how they had to leave. And then we hear Andrew Lincoln yell, "Open the gate! I have returned!"
And so ravaged, he can't keep up his southern accent anymore.
That was the most intense part of the episode, is him charging at the gate, and walker sort of limbering around. Of course, Lady Skeletor is losing her shit, and we got some real nice slow-mo kind of cool shit. Michonne yanking the gate open, and Lady Skeletor just continues to melt down, and then boom, opening credits. So that's it, really, just a setup there, which is Rick's running in, trying to live. He's bringing the walkers with him, and that's really sort of the inciting incident for this episode, is that the walkers, or at least half of them, have made their way to the gates of Alexandria, and that's sort of the crisis that is heaped upon the group this week. After the opening credits, we go right to the Alexandrians sort of reinforcing the wall. You've got this really grim mood, and that's when Rick starts to address them. And he's like, "You can hear it. Half of them still enough to surround us 20 deep." That whole thing. Oof. So
that's right.
Yeah, this I liked this scene, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah. The early stuff's good.
One of the things you and I have said in the past is that we need to see dissent within the Alexandrians, and we need to see some Rick's group and or the Alexandrians kind of standing up for each other. And that's exactly what happened this week. I kind of felt like a lot of things we had talked about started to come to fruition here a little bit, which was in that, you know, we need to see, one of the things you and I were saying is that the Alexandrians are going to go one of two directions. They're going to start to become more sympathetic to some of the things Rick is doing without totally going full Rick, or they're going to continue in their old ways and they're not going to make it. And I think one of the positives of this episode, and I know some people didn't like it, thought it was cheesy, but was really, I think that kind of hinged on Jesse. But it starts here with Aaron sort of saying, you know, after the Alexandrians are like, "Oh, but this place is a graveyard," and all that shit. Right.
Rick's basically explaining that, this is air raid drill time. This is time to be quiet. You're surrounded by zombies. No need to rile them up any further. And then, like you're saying, this place is already a graveyard, kind of throwing it all pessimistically back on Rick. And Rick doesn't really have, like, an answer for it right away. And that's when Aaron does step in and point out, like, "Hey, you know, I saw it. The thing, you know, the truck blocking the path of these walkers fell, regardless of what any of us did. It just, that happened the same way Rick had already warned, that it was just a matter of time. And at least we've diverted half. So look on the bright side, everyone."
Right. Right. Absolutely. And I do like that. And then Aaron kind of fesses up to losing his pack. I think that was pretty cool.
That was it. Yeah. That they brought the wolves in. I mean, I guess it's just implied, you know, that we already know that Rick knows about that situation now. We're running back into town. Hey, there's a lot more bodies laying around than I remember.
Right. Right. And then you have Deanna just kind of shuffling off. And then I wrote, because leadership. She's sort of like shuffling away from the scene with her fucking mopey face.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, I was thinking for a while here that we were gonna see a very slow build, but, you know, a slow and steady kind of rebuilding of Deanna stepping slowly back up into the role of leader after all this personal loss and trauma. But I'm starting to think that's not gonna be the case. I'm thinking we're seeing maybe a more permanent, you know, come down I'm not so sure at this point.
It's weird, you know. We could defend her and say, yeah, she's shuffling off all numb. It's not like she had to watch her husband exsanguinate in her arms 2 days ago.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, that is exactly what happened. But, you know, she doesn't have the benefit of being in this sort of like immediate life and death crisis to snap her out of that time. It's this weird sort of like, I want to grieve for Reg and all his beautiful sweaters. But
exactly.
But there's this like nuisance outside the wall. It's almost like a stressor. So it makes it harder for her.
Yeah,
do you
exactly.
know what I mean? It's not like it's an imminent threat like it was with the wolves. Like this imminent threat. I have to respond. I have to move. I have to, like, you're thinking about survival at that point. You're not thinking about grieving. You know, we've talked about this very theme before with this show, and that's, you know, if you're out in the woods and you're protected, you can explore philosophy. If you're fighting for your life, all you can really do is explore survival. She's kind of in this weird spot in the middle to where she can't really grieve Reg, but she can't stop thinking about Reg because she's not under an immediate threat. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah. And she's still, and I think she's, you know, this comes up later. She's like mourning the entire idea of Alexandria. I think that's almost what's haunting her even more, that this as a place in any, you know, anywhere on Earth at this point wouldn't work anymore. She's starting to grapple with that as an idea. And I don't think she can handle the thought that my fucking senator's position wouldn't work anymore in this world.
Right. I mean, if you lose somebody that you care deeply about 2 days ago, mm-hmm. I think there's going to be sort of a fatalistic outlook for a little while, and some people are just stronger than others. That's, some people will handle things differently than others, and she's been insulated from it. Her pie in the sky has been at the forefront of her thought process, not really the inner workings of survival, and now it's really starting to come home to roost, as it were. But then we got Jesse cleaning up Murder Kitchen.
That's right.
I like that. And then she has an encounter with Rick outside. What's all that about?
Yes, this is, again, Rick with his new philosophy of we don't bury killers inside the walls.
Right.
And then she's pretty much, very rightly so, is like, okay, great. Well, we can't go outside right now, so what's your plan?
I do want to make sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were done.
No, I'm good.
You're good? Because I wanted to make a comment about... I really like Jessie's devil may care sort of loose boot top with her pants tucked into her little booties. It's really sexy, and it's, you know, I know she's not trying to be sexy, and that's the fucking irony of it. But
she's
like,
pretty fall fashion aware, I gotta say.
Yeah,
gotta
right. She really is. Like, I'm thinking, do you want to tie them, lace them fucking bad boys up in case you have to run around, you know, because the wolves are climbing the walls again? Or maybe
one panel goes down and 4,000 walkers pour in.
Right. I just imagine like some fucking fashion fall magazine with like chicks running for their lives, as like fucking zombies are
tearing the boots and shoes off, throwing them away so they can actually run.
Yes. Awesome. It'd be Jesse and then that bitch from Jurassic World in there fucking with her heels.
Oh my God.
So Rick urges Jesse to wait, basically, and we learn why later, but not quite yet. And then in the next scene, we get Fat Bruce basically like, I'm fucking hungry. Doesn't look hungry. Looks real
well
fed.
I can't sit here and watch my family starve. I mean, I'm hungry, actually.
I can't sit here and watch my family starve. Really? That's what you're going with, Fat Bruce? I don't know about that.
So they were eating comfortably a day and a half ago, and now they're starving. What? Someone's being a little melodramatic.
Yeah, that kind of brings us to one of our listener comments, which I'd like to bring up now. So Brian Campbell posted on the Facebook page, because, by the way, I forgot to post a pre-show convo for the fucking Walking Dead episode on the Reddit thread, so I'm an asshole. Whoops. Anyway, Brian Campbell had written in, and he said, I'm getting mixed messages from the writers on the passage of time in this episode. Is it a week gone by where the cleanup has occurred and the Alexandrian supplies are dwindling? Or is it a day later where they're still finding the turn victims of the attack? Doesn't make sense. Is it the next day and Deanna is stumbling around in shock? Or has she been shambling around and staring at everybody with her pruned up crooked face? If so, damn, get that girl on meds.
No, and it's a good point. I do think we're supposed to only interpret it as maybe 2 days, 3 days. Like we're talking 2-3 days max. It might even still technically be the next day. Like that's why I agree. And like it's not clear quite how soon it is. Well, shit. Then again, now the only thing that I would say at this point, by the end of the episode, it's definitely been 2 or 3 days. By the start of it, Rick is still running back in the daylight from what I'm assuming is the RV. And I don't think he had time to camp. I don't think a day has gone by then. So I think we're beginning the episode at just, you know, same day or next day.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It is weird. Like, it's a good point because, and especially like that scene, like what we're talking about where Aiden is, you know, dealing with the surviving Alexandrians wanting food. And it's like, wait, is this like we've been starving in the gulags for 2 weeks now? Like, what happened?
Right. And that's my thing. Like, how much supplies do they actually have? How often did they go on runs? What is, you know, what's the supply situation like there normally?
Yeah, exactly. They couldn't have depleted that much in this amount of time. I don't think the wolves were really there focusing on stealing pantry supplies.
No, just lives.
Yeah, they were just chopping.
Just chopping them up. So yeah, I don't know. and I don't understand this whole Fat Bruce thing. I thought this was just kind of thrown in for character effect to make us feel something for Spencer. I mean, it doesn't, to you know, the thing I did like about it. So here's what I do like about it. I like the idea of the Alexandrians having dissent in their ranks. This is another thing you and I discussed.
Yeah.
I want to see that. I want to see these stressors and how it affects their harmonious little fucking paradise, their little Shangri-La. That's what I've been waiting to see. I don't understand the lack of supplies. You know, I wish it would have been just as effective if he was like, I want fucking oatmeal cookies if I'm going to die. God damn it. You know, yeah, something exactly. Like that.
If I'm going to die, I want comfort food slathered all over me.
Yeah. And it's like, really, is everyone else here hungry too? Or is this just Fat Bruce recruiting people so he can get his hand in a bag of fucking Doritos?
Oh, my God. So harsh on Fat Bruce.
But Spencer steps in.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, the one thing I would actually say that I think it is interesting about this, not necessarily this scene, but, you know, what we see in Spencer's character in this episode is that it would be very stereotypical or cliche for him to step up in the scene. And now he's proving himself to be more of one of the good guys and the leaders. But he's still kind of not. Like, he's still kind of an asshole and he's still a drunk and totally messed up. But he has this one moment in the beginning of kind of stepping up, but then he still takes advantage of it, which is all also leading to the ups and downs of Deanna's hope or, you know, lack of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know if they're trying to add depth to Spencer because it's really just a catalyst for him. This doesn't really come back in. This encounter, this descent doesn't really come back in the episode except for Spencer's the kind of hypocrisy. Do you know what I mean? I'm thinking, is this just thrown into to round him out a little, to make him a little bit more interesting? He seems to be somebody who must be planning on sticking around. I'm not sure, but yeah, he gets some flack for the gate. He ends up convincing Fat Bruce and his rebels to put away their food.
It's, you know, food
put rebels. Put it back. I guarantee fucking to you, though, if you do a Terry search on fucking Fat Bruce, he's going to have oatmeal cookies in his pockets. That fuck.
Oh, you bet. At least a box of the fucking Girl Scout Samoans.
Yeah, I love the peanut butter ones, man.
So gotta have them.
I mean, I don't mind Spencer's rhetoric. It's nice because I like the thing he says when he says, this will be a moment when we destroy this place. Like saying, we're going to look back on this. This is the moment, the watershed moment that we all fail. And this place goes tits up. He says it a little more eloquently than I do, but you know what I'm getting. And then Deanna's sort of like, you know, proud of her son, I guess, with her fucking gargoyle face. I'm not sure.
I swear she looked so much better when we first see her in the beginning of season 5 or the halfway point of season 5.
She should just be the gatekeeper, right?
Another 20 years.
Yeah,
wait, what?
She should just be the gatekeeper. She should just fucking flap her fucking gargoyle wings, fly to the top of the gate and just fucking turn into stone there, but her eyes are always fucking watching you, you know?
If you can figure out how to say her name backwards, she becomes human again.
Yeah. So Maggie starts stocking up because, you know, fucking tardy Tommy Glenn over here ain't home yet. And she's like going to go get her baby daddy. And
that's right.
The Alexandrians are making the Vietnam Wall and they throw Glenn's name on it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I guess they just weren't. Nobody was asking for any confirmations or permissions on these. They're just like, ah, anybody you think's dead, just slap it up there.
Yeah. There's the Alexandrians. Remember when I told you they're just shitty?
They just suck.
They suck. They just suck. Throw them over the wall. Extra food for everybody. And that's that.
Here we are again as Dean advocates for full Ricktatorship.
No, honestly, at this point, I'm advocating for full Shane. Just go full Shane. Shoot the fat guy in the leg. Leave him behind.
See ya, Otis.
Yeah, I think we need to... I think Rick needs to do to the Alexandrians, which Shane did to Otis. Yeah, and just sort of...
going for a full see ya, Otis policy.
Just hamstring him and leave him there.
Useless. Oh, shit.
But no, like, I don't know. It's just like, they're shitty. They're like, oh, you're going to make your Alexandrian fucking wall of death now? Like right now, right this second.
While there are zombie hands banging on the other side. Yeah.
Really? You're going to do it right now? Why?
And again, even if they were so compelled, yeah, I understand writing the names of the confirmed dead that the wolves were in there murdering, and you have their names, you buried the bodies yourselves, but they're like, Glenn and Nicholas, well, they haven't shown up yet, fuck it, call them dead.
Yeah, and it's not like a roster thing. They're not trying to fucking, this isn't a damage control report that fucking Worf gives to Picard, right? This is yeah. a fucking a kumbaya fucking memorial over here, you know? And I don't know, like,
Worf, who died by the consoles exploding in their faces.
Yeah, I just don't know. You know, I don't know. They just all drink Kool-Aid. You know what I'm saying? Drink it down. Sit in a fucking circle, and that'll be the end of them. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I just find this to be ill-timed. That's all. I'm just like, this has to be done right now. Okay,
we can't let another moment go by.
Sure. If you really want to.
But it certainly helps propel Aaron on his guilt quest.
Ah, I love me a good old guilt quest.
There's plenty of them.
So yeah, he decides that he's going to stop Maggie, who's chilling in the armory, just sort of taking what she wants.
After hooking up some rebar flashlight dangling things.
I like that. Yeah. I love that Olivia. I love that Olivia's guarding the food, but the armory is wide open.
Yeah, just walk on it. What do you want?
Yeah, it's all yours. Take
it's a
an
buffet
AR.
Bullets in here.
Yeah, sure. So anyway, Maggie's slapping some rounds in a magazine. She's actually pretty good at this, to be honest with you. It's kind of a pain in the ass to do that. She was doing it fairly competently, so she probably practiced. But Aaron tells Maggie that she's basically fucked, right? If you go out there, you're fucked. You're going to be dead. I'm
twist an ankle, you deal with one of them, then you deal with all of them.
Then you deal with all of them. And Aaron starts to tell her, listen, I know a better way. I know a safer way. You're going to go with me. So anyway, that's what Aaron and Maggie are up to. Then you've got Lady Skeletor kind of mourning Reg by gazing at the wedding ring and looking at some of the various sweaters strewn about. And then she just...
Oh, he had so many sweaters.
Sweaters versus passion.
Jesus. So, and then she kind of inexplicably picks up a map of the Alexandria town and starts writing out more like plans or blueprints for like where the garden's gonna go. I'm gonna grow alfalfa here and starts doing all this planning stuff. And then she writes a Latin phrase at the bottom of it, something about the pain will be worth it. I remember seeing.
Yeah. She goes into what I like to call a developmental fugue. She just closes her eyes and starts whipping her arms and making a beautiful painting. I don't fucking know what she's doing. This is like some beautiful mind shit. Like,
yeah.
This is like Goodwill Hunting. Like, I'm putting
fucking equations floating around her head.
There's fucking equations on the chalkboard. I'm wicked smart. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what the fuck she's doing. Yeah, she's like, the alfalfa will go here. The chrysanthemums will go here.
And see, well, this is part of why I'm starting to already think again of how you know, I swear, if you'd asked me just an episode or two ago, I'd be like, yeah, Deanna is going to eventually step back up again and be the full real leader. And, you know, Rick's going to be her right hand man. I really don't see that happening now. And this is a big part of it, because I think she's being just like totally, you know, we see her throughout this episode and the episodes before this, or after Reg has been killed and everything, being totally like gloomy and morose. And obviously it's like, okay, she's in grief, she's mourning. But this one time where we see her with energy, it's like totally idealistic and nonsensical. Like, she's sitting here while they're literally fucking surrounded by an ocean of zombies, and she's like writing up super, you know, future gardening plans for the place. And it's like, it's just not applicable. It's like she can't deal with the now. She can only think of the future, which is useless in this situation.
Idealistic. She starts drawing. This is where we'll put our new space shuttle for space exploration, guys, because we're going to the moon.
Our Mars astronauts are going to launch from the east side of Alexandria.
What do you think? East or west, guys? I mean, there's so much sun.
While she's still covered in zombie gore.
Yeah, I know. What the fuck? Yeah, it's dull. Someday this pain will be useful to you, from Ovid. Dolor hic tibi proterit olim. I don't know how to speak Latin. Go fuck yourself. How's that for Latin? So she kind of cracks a smile. She's happy with her new drawing and
satisfied. Yeah. Yeah. And then that's when she realizes son's a drunkie.
Yeah. Is he a drunk or is he just drunk? Do you know, like,
he's a drunkie stealer man is what he is.
She's all pissed off. Are you drunk?
We see him doing it throughout the episode.
Yeah, that's
here.
A good point. So it's short lived because of him. And mommy is mad that he stole from the pantry, but he sees it very differently because he's not being consistent in his morality.
Yeah. It's your fault dad's dead and brother, and we thought we were safe, but it wasn't true. Meh. Basically screaming and taking a big shit on mom. Even though he was the reason she was hopeful 5 minutes before, of like, hey, my son gave a good speech and kept Fat Bruce from eating all the food. Maybe there's some hope left yet. Maybe I should rip up new gardening plans. But that's all dashed.
Right. I gotta tell you, I give approximately zero fucks for this. Zippo. Zero fucks are given for this thing.
Oh boy.
Whatever this thing is.
For this deep family drama.
Hey, Spencer, you're a grown ass, very handsome. You're a grown ass, super chiseled man, right? Why are you crying to mommy about dada? What the fuck is going on here?
Oh my God.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. This is some weird. This is also, it's weird because it's like we used to talk about this, I think, in the last season a lot more, about how the political structure in this town is that family. Like, that's it. Like, there is no, who else is dealing with the decisions or the burdens of anything? And so it's also, it's like they have this weird, all of their like bitter years of political hardship are still just between the family. And so they have this like, there's this weird familial dynamic overlapped with this, like, I'm also shitty and mad about your political choices thing. And they're just all shitty. It's like it's like a drunken Kennedy's house party. Like, that's obviously what's going on here.
Awesome. I get in the car, Jackie. So I don't know. I wanted, here's the problem with this. Here's what I think my issue with it is. If I want to step back a minute and put on my podcaster's goggles.
Ooh.
I think that I can't abide by Lady Skeletor's constant moping, right?
Yeah.
I don't have the emotional reservoir to give to her. I don't care. Sorry. I don't care about you anymore. We're almost halfway through the season. Now, because of the way they're shooting it, I get it, only a small amount of time has passed, but still I've been subjected to too many episodes of her nonsense, right? One. Two, she's interacting with somebody I don't give a fuck about. That's a problem, right? I don't care about Spencer. If she was interacting with Rick, like when her and Rick interact at the end of the episode, I actually like that, right?
Yeah.
I don't care about Grump, you know, son Grump and mama Grump getting together and fucking grumping at each other. I don't give a shit. I want to ram their heads together like the fucking Three Stooges.
trying to figure out who gets to steal Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That's all I want to do to them.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, there's definitely a problem with too many. And it's a part of me that wants to be like, okay, yeah, I guess you should try that. How else do you expand some of these, you know, smaller characters without it? But I think it kind of like what you just said there, the way about making these characters interesting and expanding the Alexandrians is getting them interacting with characters we give a shit about,
yes.
Which is why I think, yes. And I've always liked Aaron. I think he's an interesting character, but his stuff is especially interesting in this episode because he's interacting with Maggie, and there's a bit more of a history there, and we know Maggie better. And I think if there had been more, and I think there needs to be, and I think what you said is right, there needs to be more Deanna-Rick conversations. You know, if we're still supposed to buy that she was even once the leader,
right.
why isn't Rick just even trying to talk to her more? Like, obviously, she's not going to be the one reaching out to him, but I would like to see a few more scenes of Rick being like, hey, yo, Deanna, maybe when you're in public, let's try to keep shit together a little better.
Right. Is every dude on the other side of the Alexandrian wall like a total beta male? Like, I don't get it. Like, are they all like, my balls and my pasty white skin and I'm flabby and my bones are real brittle. Like, I don't understand. Like really tiny hands. What are they like? Like, what are they like? Did she recruit these people on purpose? Like, that's what I'm saying. You have to convince me that Deanna has leadership for me to buy that people would want to follow her. I need to see something like that. You can't just like. Yes, this is another problem with Alexandria in general. You can't. Alexandria was, right? We didn't see it, the viewers. We didn't see it get built. We didn't see the sacrifice. We didn't see that. All we see is a cushy fucking life with a bunch of pansies inside the walls.
Exactly.
Right? They're not convinced. So that being said, it's hard for me to wrap my head around what makes Deanna special. Like, why hasn't somebody just said fuck you and thrown her over the fucking wall? You know, what makes her special enough to maintain this?
Yeah.
Is it because it just so happens that her husband was part of the planning and they were there first, and maybe she did the community organizing and the rallying? I mean, we never see this shit.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to believe she's a leader, you know?
Yeah, and we got that when they very first got there. She had that whole kind of like, you know, statesmanly presence about her and everything, and she could command the attention and all. But it's like we saw that instantly erode. Like we saw that all go away so quick that I have a hard time even remembering it.
Yeah, yeah. I just remember her recording everyone, the creep. Rick.
That's right.
Rick, put your hand in your pants now. So I don't know.
Making
tapes for later. So anyway, they're all right, Mom. We're all gonna be dead real soon. This is your dumb dreams and all that. I wrote Spencer's being real cunty,
real shitty, saucy, disgusting loser, drunk son,
and
grump son.
And listen, the hits just keep on coming. You know when you got a really good CD and like track 3 and 4 are the best. Well, we just were on track 3. Now we're going to track 4 because we have Carl and Ron.
Oh, that's the good stuff. And I love how this scene opens up with Ron just sticking his knife in the ground. I can just see him having a shitty YouTube channel for knife maintenance. Just stab it into the dirt a lot and think about your ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend and piss on it.
I'm stabbing the ground and imagining her, but I get a really big boner.
Oh my God.
So Carl goes to talk to Ron to ask about Enid. Hey, Carl. Hey, buddy. You have about as much tact as your old man. Probably don't talk to the kid that hates your guts. Just leave him alone.
Yeah.
Go the other way. Why are you taunting him?
Just leave
him? So, okay, listen. God. This shit sent me down a real big rabbit hole. Real deep. real deep rabbit hole on the ages of our cast. Because here's the thing I'm going to tell you right now. I obviously don't like Ron. I'm not a huge lover of Carl, although Carl's done a lot of cool shit that I like.
Yeah, Carl has grown.
But I thought to myself, Ron is a superior actor to Carl. So Austin Abrams plays Ron. Superior. Yeah. Superior Chandler.
You know,
Riggs.
I got to... And especially in this scene, yeah, you're right.
In this scene, it's no contest. Like, none. So I was like, how fucking old is Austin. And here's an inherent problem with this whole conflict. Okay, Austin's born in 96, so he's 19. Whoa. Chandler Riggs is 16.
Oh,
that is that is a fucking Grand Canyon of an age difference at these ages.
That's true.
So it's hard for me to believe when they get into their slap fight that Ron doesn't just beat his ass. With that 19-year-old, I can do 18 pull-up strength.
I got a little bit more tawny blood width on my shoulders.
Yes. Got hair on my balls. gonna beat your ass. I'm going to grab you by that tuft of fucking stupid hair. I'd rather him wear the hat. Rather than wear the hat and just pound your fucking lights out. Like
grab
hockey
that
brawl.
Screamo band haircut and just pull your head down.
Kick you in those skinny jean-assed bottom.
America's favorite scene. We finally got to it, everybody.
Yeah. So before we go more on this scene, I'm going to quiz you. Who do you think one of the oldest people in this cast is?
The oldest?
Yeah.
Of anybody on the show right now. I'm going to actually say...
You're not going to get it right.
You don't think?
Nope. Don't cheat either. I can hear you typing.
Either. Oh, I'm not. No. Carol or Morgan?
Wrong and wrong. You're close.
Fuck!
You're close.
Okay.
You're close.
All right.
Do you know the oldest person in the show? One of the oldest that I'm looking at. Not including Deanna. I mean, she was at the fucking Last Supper. I don't even know how old she is. She's
true.
Like
I'm
born
not
in 236 BC. I don't even know. fucking Michael Cudlitz.
Really?
1964, dude.
Whoa.
That dude's 12 years older than me? Holy shit.
Damn.
He's 50. He's, 50
damn,
something.
He's fucking still beef caked up.
Dude, how old do you think? So here's the best part about this. He's born in 1964. The chick he's boning, right? Played by Christian Serratos. Guess how old she is?
Oh, Jesus.
1990. My man, Michael Cudlitz.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Get some.
Oh, damn. Younger than me. Holy
20
shit.
20 years younger plus.
Whoa.
Yeah. Did that math in my head. 26 years to be precise. Boner in the library. My man.
Nice. I've been watching that's something we never talked about before.
I've been watching
actual
you since
casting.
You've been in the crib. So
at my own year.
Now close on their heels is 1 year older, 1 year younger is Melissa McBride.
Ah.
Yep. And, of course, Morgan, Lenny James. They're 65. Mm-hmm. Both of them are 1965. And then, a little long in the tooth himself, Mr. Heartthrob himself, Norman Reedus, 1969.
Ah, I thought he might be up there, actually.
Yep.
Just looking good and tanned leathery for his age.
And Rick is 3 years older than me, 73, so he's 42. 78 is Michonne, 1978. Anyway, yeah, I went down a fucking rabbit hole, as you can see. And
so the babies of the cast fight.
Yeah,
in this scene.
And by the way, dude. By the way, what the fuck's her name? Jessie.
Oh yeah,
Breckenridge, right?
I think.
Yeah, Alexandra Breckenridge is how you say it. Born in 82. So I just realized that she's the super, and I mean super sexy maid from fucking American Horror Story. Had no idea. That redheaded chick.
Right.
Good golly, Miss Molly. What the fuck is Rick waiting for?
Boy, that's the best part of that season of television.
Yeah. anyway, so yeah, I went down this rabbit hole cause I'm like, Austin Abrams is good. Like, I thought he convinced me, like the head turns and the expressions.
That he was an angry, shitty teenager.
Yes, he was in the scene, you know?
Whereas Carl kind of seems like the understudy for a high school play.
Yeah.
God.
So, do you want to take me through this battle? This epic battle?
This epic battle. It all begins when Carl has the audacity to walk away. And fucking Ron, don't leave, man. Don't leave, bro. And runs
Whoa,
over.
Whoa, is he a... What the fuck? Is he a Vato now? What the fuck?
Turn your back on me, no. See what happens, bitch.
Way more fucking suburban and shitty and lame.
For sure.
Oh, my God. One hand on the chest, and then Carl turns around to shove, and then we just have full-on titty-gripping shove match, which ends in, what, fucking Carl shoving him to the ground, and he coughs
yes.
like an old man that fell downstairs. Like, what the fuck?
Jesus Christ, did Carl give him pneumonia when he shoved him down?
Yeah, shoved him, then... Yeah. Like, Jesus, kid, you just been getting the fucking boots to you all day long before this? This was the last bit of energy you had?
Ah, it's brutal.
Oh, brutal. My God. And that's when he stays on the ground and essentially says he's going to be a tattle-telling bitch.
Yeah, I'm going to go tell your daddy on you.
I'm going to tell your dad. Oh, my God.
This guy's like fucking, this guy's got the constitution of fucking Doc Holliday.
And fuck. Doc Holliday fucking earned that sweaty cough.
He sure did. He earned it from fucking boozing and gambling.
In prostitution. This kid, nah.
Not so much.
You've earned it from ruining knives in the dirt.
Yeah. So he says, you saved
such
my...
Such a bad scene.
You
Fuck.
Saved my life, now I'm going to save yours? What?
Yeah.
If you say so.
Jesus.
All right, can
Whatever,
we get over
dude.
To Gay's Anatomy?
Oh, Jesus.
With Denise and Tara?
Denise and Tara.
Yeah.
Oh, how destroyed Eugene is going to be.
Boy. I didn't realize.
Can I get in on that?
Yeah, I didn't realize that you were of the lesbian persuasion, but I don't mind one bit, and I'm not wondering, maybe you can let me get in on that. Or something weird he would say that would be creepy and totally unsexual.
Ugh.
Totally freeze your nethers when he speaks. So, Denise doesn't know what to do with a mortally wounded man. Is that Scott, by the way? Is that shot by friend Scott?
Yeah, that was shot by old Bucket Hat Billy before he ran away in the woods and died. Yeah, he got took one in the leg.
So shot by friend Scott is in tough shape, apparently.
I know. And that's this is the first time I feel like we've had this come up in the show of, like, infected wounds, which I'm like, yes, I feel like in this universe that would be a pretty constant problem.
Yeah, for sure. And Tara comes in
out and nasty.
To check on Denise, right? It's nice. I like the scene. I mean, I actually do like it. And I know I'm being mean when I say Gay's Anatomy, but it's cool. Like, Tara's such a genuine person. I just really like her as an actress. Yeah. I think she's awesome.
She's good. And Denise is also good. I think, you know, they got a good actress in her, which makes, it just makes her scenes, you know, at least more interesting.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, whereas, like, I feel like, you know, what's written is actually not that interesting, but at least she kind of elevates it.
Yeah. Alana Masterson, by the way, plays Tara. Her 1988, by the way.
Oh.
Got some, got a set of eyebrows on her. Powerful.
Powerful eyebrows.
Powerful.
Could lead a nation with those eyebrows.
But yeah, so this, you know, this is how it starts. Then we jump back over to Jesse realizing that her neighbor kind of gave herself a little wrist shave, and she's dead. So that's that.
Yeah.
Now,
pretty impolite way to off yourself in this universe.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Hey, thanks, asshole.
Hey, now I got a zombie that's going to be sneaking up on me in the dark.
Hey, real cool, you selfish bitch. Why don't you just fucking eat a bullet, go to the armory, and blow your brains out?
Like a self-respecting, pathetic person in the apocalypse.
Yeah, Jesus. Now I got to deal with your fucking corpse that's going to try to eat me. You know? Come on.
Ouch. Yeah.
So anyway, pretty freshly dead, which I liked. I enjoyed the makeup job here. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Still had a pair of lungs on her. Could be shouting angry zombie noises.
Fact. And then Jesse pulls out the old buck knife and gives the old eyeball slash, the old eye poke.
And then proceeds to have her Rick speech scene.
I actually don't mind it. Some people didn't like this. But first of all, Fat Bruce came over because he's like, oh, she's dead. Can I get her fucking pantry? Can I get in her pantry?
Can I get in now?
I'm starving. Look at me.
Hey, I'm wasting away over here. Yeah. Has she got Nutella in there?
Yeah. The fuck? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah. No, this, I think Jesse delivers this pretty, it's making me like this actress more and more, but I actually do agree with some of our listeners and some of the internet in general, where I'm a little bit tired of these speeches.
Yes.
You know, we've had a lot in this one season alone of like, the world's bad now. Get used to how shitty it is. The world's shitty. I'm like, okay, I agree. I'm totally on your side here, Rick, and now newly minted Jesse, who's a protege. But I get it. I get it. Yeah. I'm just like, I don't know.
Well, let me tell you something. Out here in this world, you kill or you die. If you let the biters come after you.
That's what it is, right? It's the same fucking thing, just said it a little differently. And we've been hearing it forever. That's a good point. And I think, let me clarify, it's not the speech so much as I like the character realization.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it was necessary for her to have a speech for us to realize this is where she's at. First of all, when she went fucking Charles Manson on the lady who went into her house and just hacked her to pieces, right? That was great. I thought, okay, she wants to live. And then
that's right.
When she's like, all right, I'm going to go up there and poke this bitch's eyeballs out so Fat Bruce can get in and get her canned peaches. And she does. And it might have been enough to turn around and look at everybody and just kind of nod and walk off the steps.
Yeah.
And this is exactly the reason I like this scene, maybe not so much the speech and the dialogue, kind of silly, you know, but is because this is kind of something we've been saying forever. And that's, you're going to go one way or the other. If you go the other way, your life's probably going to be pretty short unless, you know, fugue-induced creative drawing fucking makes your spaceship, right? Unless this crazy thing she thinks is, you know, without the other part of it, you know?
Yeah. And I think, yeah, like you're saying, like, it's important that another one of these native Alexandrians has made a public show of how they are now and what, and like, and I agree with you, like, this could have been almost better if she had just walked up and done it and, you know, turned around and was just like, we all have to step up now, or we all have to do this, or take care of what needs to be done. And then just walk away. And that's that. Like, speechifying it, we didn't really totally need.
Agreed.
But it's a good, yeah, I mean, it's good that the rest of the native Alexandrians are seeing not Rick and not somebody in Rick's crew doing something like this. I think that's important for the, you know, all of them to see.
Yeah. And then the adventures of Maggie and Aaron continue in the sewer. Maggie keeps attempting to shed Aaron and leave him behind, but old Aaron is doesn't want to see any more names go up on that wall that's been around for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. He's on his own. Guilt Quest 5000.
Yeah. That wall's been haunting
killed.
That wall's been haunting him since noon when they made it.
Exactly.
God. And this is where Maggie says some shit like, if he is alive, he would have signaled us. If he's dead, I don't want to be waiting on him. I like the idea that she wants resolution.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, and I think the logic of what she's saying is pretty sound, really, because she's saying the only reason he wouldn't have signaled yet is if, you know, A, he's dead, and I wanted to know that for sure if that's the truth, or B, if he hasn't signaled, that just means he's alive and has been unable to, so he's injured or he's been taken. You know, I like that she brought up that possibility, whereas before they would have just been like, oh, maybe he's hurt or he got lost. Like, after Terminus, after dealing with the shit they've done, yeah, there could be some other evil fucking people out there who've done this. She acknowledges that.
Yes.
And she seems more level-headed about this than, you know, the first time where it was after the prison breakdown.
Yeah, I can imagine if you think somebody's out and about and injured and in need of help and you care about them, you're going to want to go try to rescue them, right? I mean, that seems like a logical feeling to have.
Yeah.
Let alone the fact that they have this deep connection. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's, there, you have to go about things a certain way. You have to be smart about the way you do this. You can't just go yourself. And I don't understand. I can imagine that Maggie's point of view is that I don't want to endanger anybody else, but I want this to get done. So she's like, I'll just do it on the down low and fucking slip out and go do what I need to do rather than having a committee about it. She's just kind of taking action into her own hands.
Yeah. And Aaron doesn't want her to be any, you know, less safe than she could be.
Yeah.
And he's, again, Guilt Quest 5000, pushing him forward. Gotta have it. Yep. Feels like he's already been responsible for enough death, so he's got to help prevent it any way he can.
Right. He's really wearing the burden heavy. And he ends up smacking his head on the ladder, cutting himself really good. And then we get the most badass walker we've seen in a long time.
The gnarliest zombies I've seen on here in a while. And fucking definitely cool. The first that has made me gag again in maybe a season or a season and a half.
Yeah.
When she put her hand up through its rib cage, I was actually
wrote, what the fuck is what the fuck is Maggie's major malfunction? Like, why can't she fight a walker?
Oh, fuck. Yeah. That one got her by surprise.
I guess.
I think she was backing up going, oh, shit, that's gross.
Yeah, maybe.
Just, damn, it looks like it's made out of bark now.
Shit walkers.
God, the sewer bark shit walkers.
They end up dispatching these couple of cutie pies.
Aaron.
Aaron does. And then he tends to the head wound, and that's when she tries again to send him back. I like this. I think that there's a realistic part of this scene where it's like she asks him many times to go back. It's not just like, go back. No. Okay. You know, like you can tell it's on her mind. And that's something that you don't see in acting all the time. It's not just say your fucking words and say your dialogue, but you have to get in the head of the character. She doesn't want you there. So she's going to use whatever thing happens to try to convince you to go back instead of just giving in. I just think that was cool.
Yeah, whatever new possible excuse she can, align with what just happened, I like that, especially, like I was saying, that Aaron really took out both of the walkers, and she's like, all right, well, you should better go out and head back. You need to get stitches for that. And he's like, I just saved your ass, basically. And she's like, oh, I could have done it.
Yeah.
And it's like,
had him right where I wanted him.
Yeah, I had him. He was up against the wall.
And then they travel on into the depths of the sewer again. But then we bounce back to Alexandria, and we have Denise draining some pus from the infection site from shot by friend Scott. And
After reading her Grey's Anatomy.
Sure, right. Grey's Anatomy this time, not Gay's Anatomy. And
it's the informative version, not the fun version.
And I'm guessing his vitals level out, I guess.
Yeah, pretty damn fat. I didn't know just sucking a little pus out of the leg would do that much, but I ain't no doctor.
Goes beyond my medical expertise. And then, of course, Ron is talking to Rick about Enid. Take me through this scene, brother. Tell me what you think about it.
Well, he wasn't fucking lying when he said he was going to go tattletale to Rick, which is hilarious and weird because, as we know, he hates Rick. But that's, the undercurrent of the scene. He goes to tell Rick that, hey, Enid's been out there. She's probably still out there. Rick's like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me? But then he also brings up that Carl was going to go and, oh, but don't worry. I stopped him. I didn't let him go. And he, asks if he's there. He says, yeah, he's still back here. But then we get the weirdness of, okay, new Papa Rick, can you teach me how to shoot? I've been thinking about what you were saying.
Weird. Give me the mindset of Ron, if you dare. What do you think's going on with Ron?
Prediction, he's being shitty and weird, and there's going to be either, I think our listeners are fucking honing in on it as well pretty well. That, either he's going to attempt a fucking murder of Rick or Carl or it's going to be one of the two. Maybe both. I don't know. But he is literally asking him to teach him how to shoot so that he can get a hold of a gun or know how to use it to be either a shithead against them or against letting in other people. I don't know. They're depicting him as totally, non-logical at this point, off the wall. Like, even the way they linger on him after the fight with Carl, he's just laying on the ground where he could be getting up, but he's not.
It's a top
they're
down just depicting shot.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're depicting him as, basically teen angst devolving into, actual insanity. So, I don't know what's gonna happen, but more is going to happen with this character. He's going to fuck over our characters somehow.
Yeah. It would be pretty impressive storytelling if Ron killed somebody and Glenn returned safely, simultaneously. You know what I'm saying? It would be quite the red herring. But, I don't know.
Or just think about how angry all of the world would be is if Glenn makes it back alive and safe and then Ron shoots him. Oh, God. And then we cut to a shot of Gimple just flipping us all off.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, I'm not sure. Like, on the one hand, you have Ron. Why, if Ron doesn't like Carl, why not just say, go over the wall, asshole.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, what do you care? Yeah, you don't like him and you think it's already dangerous enough for you to be doing this, then say, yeah, good riddance, dude. Good luck.
One. Two, if you want to learn how to shoot, you could ask your mom. You could ask a lot of other people. Why Rick?
Yeah. And that's why in the first time I watched this, in that scene when he asked Rick for, you know, the gun, can you teach me to shoot? I honestly thought he was going to like make a move to shoot him right then and there or something super dumb like that, which would have ended super fast for him. But I honestly thought he was going to try it.
Right. I was thinking somebody might be getting shoved off this fucking thing. I keep thinking that with these guys perched up on the tops of these walls, man. No place to grab. I mean, if somebody pushes you, you're done.
Done.
Especially with the walkers there now. I mean, but yeah, it's, Rick. I mean, I get it. It's hard to put yourself in the mindset of what's supposed to be a 15, 16-year-old kid who just lost his father, who's seen a bunch of death and murder, who is in this weird situation when he's got these weird boner feelings for Enid, who's kind of into this other kid. It's a confusing mess.
Yeah. You can't trust a kid with all those wiener emotions.
But then part of me is like, is he this, I don't know, manipulative creep who's bent on murder? Like, is that what he, does he, because
the, let's, yeah, let's, it's like, we, is the show going to take him that far?
Right. It seems really stupid because, because we have to remember that Pete was a bad dude.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Pete was a bad dude. It's not like Pete was like a good dad and Rick got in the way and things got ugly and he's dead. I don't know. I mean, it's something I can't even begin to wrap my head around. Part of me thinks is Ron trying to make some kind of amends? I mean, they showed him early in the episode where he's thumbing his knife, right? When Rick's having his speech, they show a really distinct shot of his knife in the foreground. And he's
he's looking at Carl.
Yeah, he's thumbing his blade like he's going to go after Carl. I mean, I could see maybe going after Carl, but not Rick.
Yeah, I don't know. But there was all that animosity he had toward Rick in the very first episode for killing my dad.
Right. Yeah. And Rick just instantly hands him the gun. I mean, I know he unloads it.
Yeah.
But hey, cool it. Cool your jets.
Easy. Weird kid.
Yeah. It's weird. It's really weird. Anyway, we go back to Gay's Anatomy and it really escalates quickly with a real nice kiss.
Just a straight-on smoocher. Thanks so much for the words of encouragement. I know you didn't ask for this or see it coming, but here you go.
This is not a encouraging slap, you know, lips pressed together. Those lips are pressed together for a while.
Yeah, watch it's a it long again. Kiss.
Watch it again. Anyway.
That is a doozy. Yeah.
Scissor me and timbers. Sorry.
Sorry. Oh my God.
I put it on Twitter. I figured I'd say it. I think that's from South Park, right? I think it is.
I think so.
Anyway, Denise says that it's the end of the world. Patera says it's not. And then Denise says being afraid sucks. So talk to me about this a little bit.
I like it. I actually do like, again, I feel like by the end of this episode, the characters I actually give a shit about from this episode are Maggie and Aaron, Tara and Denise, and of course Rick and Jesse to a lesser extent. But you know, I basically listed those in order of who I think is interesting and care about, and they are. This is a good scene between. You know, we haven't really seen Tara have much of an interaction with anybody outside of, you know, Sasha and Eugene and those guys really. And so it's kind of interesting. Again, I think this was a useful time where they've taken a new character and partnered her up with a character who we know and matters and, you know, is building something interesting here. But I kind of like the dynamic of this, how, you know, she walks up and has this big kiss like this that's supposed to be like really nice. But she also right after that is just like, yeah, it's the end of the world. Kind of like undercutting the power of a nice, friendly kiss with like, yeah, I'm just doing it because I don't give a fuck anymore.
Right.
Which is a little harsh, but interesting.
It could
could have been Tara's reaction too. I mean, if Tara just grabbed her face and just started just mashing back,
let's make it happen like right here on good, the steps.
A real good clothes clutching, face grabbing makeout. Like, but the fact that she just kind of was like in shock, I think it maybe prompted Denise to make an excuse because maybe she felt kind of silly, you know?
That's true too. Yeah. Again, there's some layers, there are perceptible layers and like interesting, you know, depth to this character already.
I thought she was batting 1,000, to be honest with you, because when I press my lips to girls' mouths and they don't run away, that's progress. It's progress. It's really good.
Always unsolicited, always unexpected.
Always unsolicited. Always when I'm, you know, hanging around recess and but no, I actually do like this a lot. I think Tara's great. I think she's likable and she's got enough quirk to her that makes her enjoyable to witness. I like Denise as well. And I like Denise and Tara, and I like this sort of chemistry between them. I think it's very adorable, and I would like to see more of it. And I think it deserves some screen time. Speaking of screen time, where's Carol?
I agree. Biggest fucking question of this episode. We get about 8.5 seconds tops of Morgan. We see 5 seconds of Michonne from behind, from above, and not a single solitary glimpse of Carol. We get one mention of her when Rosita is standing alone on the wall and fucking Spencer comes up to relieve her and she's like, oh, wasn't it Carol's shift? And he's like, oh, I took over. Okay. What?
And no Carol and no Eugene, no priest boys, McSweaty.
Father McSweaty, yeah. Nothing. None of them.
Weird.
What the fuck?
Yeah, weird. But
it's
anyway.
Like this is all their break day. They all just like took this is their union day off.
Yeah. Let's get back to the sewer sisters, see what they're up to. So they get to the end of the pipeline and Maggie realizes that there are too many walkers to make it through.
Oh yeah.
She's like, yeah, this is a bad move. And she really gets emotional here. No, she shouts, it's over.
Yeah. And I like that she's the one to say, no, this isn't, you know, back in season 4, it was, you know, everybody else. It was Sasha and Bob being like, no, Maggie, we got to stop. And she's like, no, we keep going. Anything for my Glenny. But yeah, here she's the one going, no, this is crazy. This isn't going to fucking work. And fucking Guilt Quest 5000. No, press forward. We'll make it work. And then she actually has to hold him back.
I want to see if they're going to have relationships in this show. I think I want them to be complicated, but I want them to be complicated in a more creative way. Like Shane, Laurie, and Rick was great. Complicated as a motherfucker, right?
That's for sure.
That's complex, good shit. Like I feel like the show's interest in Glenn and Maggie is just not there. Because their complication is she's missing, and then he's missing, never like they're together and they have a weird complication, you know?
That is true.
And it's the same with Jesse and Rick. Like their complication lasted for 4 minutes when it had to do with something involving like Pete. Like that's a cool complication.
Something's in the way of our love.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. But now I want them to be in the way of their love. You know, I'm not saying I need you to fucking write the show like The Affair, right? I'm just saying, saying, you know, something a little bit more, I think would be cool. I don't even care about Jesse and Rick's thing. It's so new and whatever. But more like Glenn and Maggie. They've been around forever. And I just kind of want to see something a little more complex than like, oh, I'm going to go. No, you go. No, which is so unselfish. No, I know. We fucking love that shit out of each other, don't we? I know. Oh my God, you're so beautiful. Yeah, you're so beautiful too. I was fucking flipping pieces like 2 weeks ago. Now I'm fucking you. It's crazy. I know, right? I can't believe you're fucking me. It's crazy. Yeah, I love you. Oh God, I love you so much. Really, just want to hug.
Never would have fucked a guy like you pre-apocalypse. Oh my God.
I know. I can't even believe this is happening right now. Jesus H. Christ. Right.
And no, it is true. Like the show relies on the fact that, hey, this is our, you know, this is our standby romantic relationship. So anytime they're apart, it's tragic and compelling. And, you know, I like each of the characters.
You're right.
And that's what they always, you know, kind of default on for them. And I like each of the characters, but yeah, no, I agree. It's kind of worn thin at times of like, okay, we get it. If Glenn and Maggie are apart, oh, it's hard because they love each other.
Yeah.
And they're essentially the show's only couple. So they're just kind of leaning on that a little bit heavily.
Yeah. Why don't they have like Herschel Green just kind of be racist, right? Make it tough. He's like, I don't want you hanging out with them damn Orientals or whatever. He says something.
Dad, we don't say that.
Dad, Oriental is a rug, not a person. And he's like, yeah, I remember WW2. He's like, but he's not even Japanese. He's like, they're all the same. And stupid hijinks ensue. I don't know.
That's his last words. He gets his head chopped off.
by a tall, handsome white guy with one eye.
They're all the same.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Anyway.
Needlessly sullied the reputation of Herschel.
So anyway, Maggie admits to being pregs.
That's it. It's official. It's show canon, finally. They've answered one question.
Wow-wee. Didn't see that coming. So I do like her performance, though. I think she does a good job. She feels guilty over thinking she could have helped him. She's not sure if he's alive. She just wants to see his face. So let me ask you about this, because that my whole tangent about this relationship was something that was a precursor to another group of thoughts I had, and that's this. One of the people who wrote in said something about, is this Sophia 2.0, right? I don't remember who. I'm kind of glancing over
I
them.
I think
right.
That was Mr. David Zapanta.
Was it David Zapanta? Are you sure about that? It might have not have made the cut because, you know, I have to truncate their comments down. But somebody said something about, is this Sophia 2.0? So here's something I want to say. Characters die, right?
All the time.
Characters die all the time. And sometimes it's horrific and you see them getting ripped apart in front of you. Sometimes it's, oh, shit, they have been bit. And now we're going to have like this makeshift wake like we did for fucking Bob, right? Bob Stuckey.
That's right.
They're all like lined up to say their goodbyes while he was sick. And I understand the missing person angle. I like that actually.
Yeah.
I just think the way they showed, I think it was just a little bit gimmicky the way they showed the dude getting ripped apart, possibly on top of him to kind of try to trick the audience and then all the fuckery after the fact. Right.
Yeah. So many levels of fuckery.
Yes, fuckery. And so I think it's interesting storytelling to make the audience feel what the character feels when they have no word on somebody.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Of absolutely no confirmation one way or the other.
That's what was so fascinating about Sophia, even though I think that was kind of drawn out. And that's, where is she? We don't know. We're just getting clues, right? I kind of feel like, had they not done that already to such a high extent, that it would almost have been interesting for the viewers to not even know fucking what's going on with Glenn. Like, is he missing? Is he there? Is he not? Right? And then you can really make us feel something like Maggie's feeling. You know, it's kind of neat to think about that. So I've always thought like, I wonder how that would have worked. Like, I don't know. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, of just because, I mean, we can't have that feeling because of what our last image of Glenn was. And now we're all just up in the air of, you know, to what extent is this real or not? Is Glenn actually okay? Is Glenn for sure dead? And it's sort of, I think it's even attempting to kind of do what you're saying by them doing that, by making it a deal of fuckery, whether we don't know whether he's alive or dead. But it's just, I think that was a gamble that they went for, and it just didn't quite work out the way they wanted it to.
And do you think they're doing that to put us in Maggie's mindset, to make us feel something she feels? Because
I think they were attempting to.
Yeah, right.
I'm not sure if it worked.
Right, and that's kind of like the thing with Sophia was your issue.
We had no idea.
No, none.
Yeah.
Zero.
We saw her disappear into the woods, and then that was it.
And then that
and we
was
didn't
it.
See her again until she came out of the barn as a zombie. So that, you know, by them doing that, it's the opposite, because we truly, truly, truly have no idea until we unequivocally know by the end. Whereas what we've seen with Glenn we have possibilities in all of our minds.
Right. So the and, Sophia conversation had to come up when they were whiteboarding this shit. They had to think, like, how are we going to do this? We don't want him to be definitively dead because we don't want them to be like, oh, poor Maggie. And then Maggie's, is he alive? Is he or dead? Like, that whole thing doesn't matter if we know he's 100% dead.
That's true.
Right. And if we, and if they retread Sophia, people are going to say exactly what we said, which is, what is this, Sophia 2.0? And then Sophia wasn't a main character. Sorry, Sophia, you weren't. Wasn't a main character. You can't, could you take a guy like Glenn and just be like, oh, look at Glenn's dead. Like, holy shit, we didn't see how he died. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if a show can do that and then not piss everyone off. So it's part of me is almost like, I kind of understand why they did it the way they did. The problem, as we've said ad nauseum, is that the fuckery was the problem. The fuckery from the production standpoint. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to think this is a weird path that they ended up taking. Anyway, I was just kind of wondering about that. So,
but I do agree. I think that this scene, you know, the actual her speaking with Aaron, and you know, they hug at the end of this in front of the zombies pouring in at them. I do like this. This is a good moment of the show, of this episode.
Yeah, it is. I like it too, because it's not predictable. Like that's what I like about it. I didn't expect her to go like, you know what? No, I'm not going out there. It's too risky.
Yeah. I'll admit, I even figured, even my thinking of how The Walking Dead plays out, I'm like, okay, well, they're going to run into this wall, and then they're going to be like, she's, you know, Maggie's going to go, well, we have to find another way around. Let's find something. Right. Let's go back up and try going over or whatever.
Right. At which point they would have been pinched, or they would have gotten a sign, or they would have saw the fucking flare gun go up, which is going to happen. Could they say again, could they make another mention about a sign? He would have shown us a sign. No shit. We know.
And Stephen Ewan's name's gonna be in the fucking credits again.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking fuckery.
So much fuckery.
Unbelievable, dude. You will be placed in the Iron Maiden for 4 hours for fuckery. Jesse tries to make Sam some cookies, huh?
Oh, God. This, let me tell you right here, there are a couple other scenes competing with this title, but I hereby hand this scene the title of this week. I could not give less of a fucking shit about anything going on and anything said.
Yeah, I do not
care.
When we sat down to record, I looked everywhere in the recording studio for a fuck. Everywhere, under the table, under the fucking chairs, in the bookshelves.
Taking off paintings, looking behind them, all sorts of shit.
Yeah, and all the wonderful, cool shit our fucking listeners give us. I'm looking at all these letters and shit, right? Fucking panties and bras they send us. Looked everywhere. Couldn't find a fuck.
Not one. Not one for this. Oh, man. I forgot this kid's name after this. I don't know. Care. Oh shit. Two watch throughs on this, and I forgot it every time.
Yeah. You ungrateful little puke. It didn't change up here. It's magic up here, mommy. Come up to my magic place. So he's got a magic place, whatever. He's got a magic house up there, and everything's safe. He passes on the cookies because he doesn't want to walk down. This is a problem with this fucking generation. He doesn't want to walk down the fucking stairs to get the cookies his mom made him. You ungrateful fucking bastard, you. How about you take mom's fucking... How about this? How about you cut the fucking grass, get your own money, get on the fucking bike, ride down to the corner store, right? Ride down and without a fucking helmet, you buy your own cookie dough, you come back and help mom make the fucking cookies. What do you think about that, Sammy? Huh? Am I getting through to you?
Oh, fuck. I kind of would have enjoyed seeing her go full Mommy Dearest, just, no more lion hangers! Fucking sling a plate of cookies at the top of the stairs.
The plate just crashes off his head.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh shit! Rick's at the bottom of the stairs. Jesse, he comes up and puts the boots to him.
If there's one thing Rick knows how to do, it's beat up kids.
Child abuse is funny.
Oh my god. And it's, yeah, you know, it's one of those things where, again, I can step back and be all objective. Yes, this kid of anybody has had the least experience with all of this and is the most traumatized. And that's another, you know, as far as Jesse's character, I think it is kind of interesting that, yeah, she is still balancing that line of like, I'm the one out here. I'm the only fucking Alexandrian with guts and can stab my neighbor in the face once they become a zombie. Yes. But I've also got to bake cookies and lure my wimpy ass kid out from the fucking bedroom.
I get it too.
I get it, but there's a duality. I not give a shit?
No.
I don't want to hear about it.
Mommy, what happened to Daddy? Oh, nothing. He just, a bunch of wine fell out of his neck. He's fine, or out of his head. I don't know.
They had a Merlot party, popping bottles all over him.
First, a bunch of wine came out of Uncle Reg's neck, all over his sweater.
Oh, will he wash his sweater, Mommy?
And then a bunch of candy came out of Daddy's head. He's fine. He'll be home tomorrow.
Can I go pick up all the red taffy? No. You stay inside.
You'll walk down for the taffy, but not the fucking cookies? You prick.
No, Mom. Why am I? Oh, shit.
Outstanding.
Terrible scene. Moving on.
Let's get back to Lady Skeletor. But you know what? Before we get back to her, fucking Castle Grayskull, wherever the fuck she hangs out. Shit.
Oh, God.
By the way, she goes back upstairs and puts the cookies outside his door. That's the fucking problem with this kid.
Uh-huh. Coddled. She should have dangled that plate. She should have put the cookies in Tupperware and hung the Tupperware from a necklace around a zombie and kicked it into his room. You fight for your life and the cookies.
Those might be your last cookies, fucko. I don't know. We'll see. I don't think he's going to make it. So anyway, fucking Lady Skeletor... overhears some disgruntled Alexandrians talking, and then she just gets to work with her Irish knife. Just gets to work. Irish knife combined with Irish rage.
Oh, come here, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, you know she was envisioning Reg going over their monthly sweater budget.
Holy shit, man.
Just she taking just, out the rage.
Just letting it go. Just letting it go.
I resisted the temptation to sing that fucking song.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Somebody's going to YouTube supercut that. Slow motion Deanna just stabbing a zombie in the chest.
Calls it an Irish knife, does he? So, yeah. I don't know. And then Rick comes over, pops his head.
Actually does what needs to be done.
Yeah.
But hey, good showing of effort to Deanna. That's for sure.
She drops
this little like 4.5 foot tall lady brought it to the ground and kept stabbing it.
Oh yeah. I like her style. I like her style. She needed to get that out. It was very cathartic. Definitely don't use a broken bottle though. It's a terrible.
Something a little better on hand.
Terrible weapon. And then she does the Kirk. I want to live. That whole thing, and they start to talk about leadership, and she kind of, she tapping out. What's going on?
That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking that's actually more the route that's going to happen. Yeah. You know, maybe if she's not stepping out of, you know, it completely, but that she's, you know, in a sense promoting Rick to, hey, you should be the leader, and I'll be your, you know, right hand, you know, lady.
And then she's talking to Rick about a pie in the sky, and Rick's like, listen, I don't really want to talk about pie in the sky. I just want to get back and get a piece of Jesse's pie. So can we move on?
I got my own piece of pie. It's getting cold. I'm trying to give her a hot slice of Rick.
I got to go home to my pie. First, I'm going to discipline that shitbag kid, put the boots to that boy, Sam, and then I'm going to get my pie.
Oh, my God.
Classic. So Aaron and Maggie stand on the wall. Maggie will be right back. She goes and erases Glenn's name that's been on the wall since lunch. And
yeah.
They erase Nicholas's name too, which, well,
Boy, don't worry about that one.
Joke's on you guys. Aaron tries to convince Maggie to name her child after her mother. That was actually kind of cute.
It was cute.
But he's getting a little clingerish. I'm concerned for Aaron. He better just chill. He's like following her everywhere, name her kids after her, you know. Next thing you know, you wake up, he's in bed next to you. Whoa, what the fuck? I said you could stay on the couch. Spencer climbs the gate to go relieve Rosita, who's kind of hide crying, which I like. I like a good hide cry. I think that's cool. Rosita.
I think it's a good characterization from Rosita. I would expect that from her. Yeah. I wouldn't expect her to be a pouty pants in public and like, hey, everybody, I need a shoulder. Like, she would just, you know, she's doing it while on duty, you know, and still handling her shit. I like it.
Yeah, she's realizing that her father lover is not home.
My father fucker.
She's crying because she's looking down at his driver's license, and she's like, he said 74, not 64. That's slippery fuck. Dolphin smooth
bastard.
Nice. So anyway, Spencer says he got lucky. Okay, so I thought he did two, but I watched the scene again. So I went back to JSS and I watched JSS. I watched the scene where he actually shoots at the truck.
Yeah, okay.
So he opens up on that truck, and I thought, one of the things we said in the JSS podcast is we said, did they just stick a walker in there and like wedge him in on like the thing to drive him straight through the thing? Right.
Yeah.
That was very descriptive. I said thing like 16 times. I thought, let me try that again. I thought maybe they wedged a walker on the accelerator. Gas pedal. Right. So they could just watch it blast through and smash down the walls. But no. I watched it again, and the guy in the cab is a very freshly new zombie. So what happens is he shoots him. Brum. He ends up getting lucky because he cuts loose on the cab, kills the guy. The guy loses control, doesn't go where he wants to go, crashes. Then there's a couple scenes, and then when they go back to that scene where Morgan tells him to go hide, you get I looked at the walker multiple times. I think he actually did kill him.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I don't know. I still, because he looks fresh. And I'm like, did he kill him? They don't make it up. They never, it's not like he goes, ba-da-da-da-da, and they cut to the cab and they show the guy like getting riddled with bullets or anything. So, but it's not definitive. But he's acting like, oh, yeah, we should go lucky. And I was like, yeah, you're right, you did, you fucker. You want these guys to crash mugs together and sing songs about you, and you didn't even do anything, you know?
Yeah, seriously. It's just, like, okay, you did one useful thing. Good.
Just eat your stolen crackers.
Yeah, you slimy fuck.
So Jesse's laundering her dead husband's bloody flannel, and Rick shows up to explain why he didn't want to bury the bodies yet. I wanted Glenn to be back by now. I wanted those things gone. I just wanted to wait. I thought that was kind of cool reasoning. I like when Rick shows some vulnerability, and it's definitely a quick way to Jesse's pie.
Gotta show vulnerability to the lady.
You can't be a sociopath. You gotta have that hard exterior, but you got a little bit of soft in there too. A little bit. gives Jesse the hope that maybe with some rehabilitation she can change you and then get bored of you and go fuck somebody else. So I don't know.
Sounds like somebody speaks from the bitter limit of experience.
I'm just, I have a very strong imagination. I don't know. I'm just a cynic. So, anyway.
Yeah. So we essentially close on this kiss. Like, I mean, that's, you know, it's not the very last thing we see, but it's the last major thing.
So they're in the house. He slaps the kiss on her. What do you think? Are you in the, I hate this, I love this, are you a fence rider? Talk to me.
I'm leaning more towards I don't like it, just because I still would thought that this Jesse character was going to grow more on her own, and it wasn't going to just be, I'm growing as part of a romance for Rick, which I'm kind of like, I don't really care. I still wanted him to get together with Michonne, that's all I'm fucking saying. I'll never let go of that. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, for the character himself, I'm like, you know what, Rick? Yeah, that's good for you. But at the same time, as far as the story goes, I'm like, I don't 100% buy it. I don't know.
Yeah. this wasn't one of those unrequited, like, mash lips together, clutching flesh and hair kisses. It was kind of like this weird, I don't know.
Out of necessity.
I think Brian Campbell said it best where he thought, he said it would almost have been more believable if they like fucked, like just got it out. And then was like, let's keep this on the DL for now. And I kind of, and I'm kind of leaning that way too, to be honest with you. Like, what is their relationship? Like, what is their, I almost feel like there's this, I don't know, you know, I almost feel like, first of all, Sam's not leaving his magic room. Right. So you're probably safe logistically to just fucking bone.
Oh, in the garage? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, why not? Right?
Just a couple of drunk baboons getting it out of their system.
Pull a Fear the Walking Dead and fuck in the garage.
Exactly.
Good old garage fucking. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't processed it. It didn't make me go gross or stupid. I mean, the dialogue leading up to it was like, oh, there's this weird vulnerable moment and she's looking at him with those eyes and, you know, she's got the hungry eyes and he makes his move and they kiss and then he's like, all right, I'm done. Good for you. It's good for me.
It's time to high five and we'll go sleep.
Hey, Jess, did you come? Never mind. I don't care. So I don't know. I don't know. I think I might be with Brian Campbell on this one. If they were like kind of just like let it go, just let go and did their thing. I don't know.
A little more passionate, a little more raw.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, so let's talk about Lady Skeletor's fucking funeral march.
Our final shot. Goy. She has to come over and high five the zombies through the fence for a second angrily.
Yeah. She, by the way, her bitch face is turned up to 11.
Oh, man. She can stare literally. If she probably could just burst into Medusa on Will at this point. Oh, man. She's looking mean.
Yeah. I don't. It's.
And I think it's. Maybe she's gotten, you know, the taste of Walker blood at least once now. So now she's all amped up, ready to kill.
For sure. Crack in the wall. Is that what we're seeing from the pressure of the zombies on it?
That's what I'm seeing. There's been debate on the internet of like, oh, is it something dripping down from above? Right. Is it cracks? I think what makes me think it's more of a hole or a pressure in the wall itself is we got a little tiny tease of that when they built that further out wall to kind of have the zombies bounce off of. And we saw how hard the zombies were being like smooshed up against it. And I think we're getting just even more pressure now to where there are zombies literally like pressing into it so hard that their blood is popping open out through the cracks of the wall.
Yes.
And it's just implying that some of the pressure is going to start to actually force holes and cracks in the walls.
I think you're right.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think so too, because if somebody else slit their own wrists, I pray that Rick just goes Nero and burns that fucker to the ground and kicks Jesse to death. Honestly. Nero kicked his pregnant wife to death, right? So maybe he just kicks Maggie to death and burns down Alexandria.
Maggie, for no reason, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, absolutely. He just torches it. If somebody else offs themselves, fucking hell.
I think that's the direction they're going. Yep.
Rick, why are you wearing a toga? That's weird. Why are you wearing a wreath laurel around your head?
Oh, my God.
I don't know. Maybe that'll happen. So what's up with Funeral March Skeletor? Like, what is she doing?
I'm actually, the way I interpret it is that she, even though I've been talking this whole episode about how this is maybe the end of her leadership, you know, capacity, I think that may still be true on the overall, or at least like she might, you know, set up Rick above her in a way. I think she is going to become a little more hardcore about fucking fighting zombies or wanting to do it. Maybe, or at bare minimum, that this will be like some kind of action that spurs her out of just like wandering, grieving.
Sure.
I'm thinking at least that much. Yeah, otherwise, she's becoming a fucking unhinged. Right. I don't know.
Right. I gotcha. All right, man. So that is now. That's it, buddy. What do you think?
Yeah, that is it.
All right. Well, then, let us do this. Let us get to our listener feedback. And then if we got any final thoughts, we'll give them to you. What do you think about that, Matt?
Perfecto.
All right, let me blast some music. Okay. Do you want to read this week or do you want me to?
I can read.
Do it.
Let's see. We already did Brian Campbell. So next up, Craig Deely. Was that a crack in the fence at the end or blood running down inside from the press of bodies against it? Either way, we're looking at a perimeter breach, and for all Deanna's plans and crops, etc., that crack could be signifying the open of a final and fatal crack in their society. Best wishes? Yep. Yeah. No, I think I agree that either way that we're getting the signs of the end.
Indeed.
Next, Alex Guevara. Who knew Caitlyn Jenner made a special guest appearance at the end?
That's fucked. I love it.
Ouch.
Yeah, he's referring specifically to the image of Deanna walking away. It's like a profile shot. He actually posted it on Facebook. If you want to see it, go to facebook.com/libertystreetgeek. That's facebook.com/libertystreetgeek. You should go there anyway because it's awesome.
Join in. Next, David Zapanta. I'm normally a big fan of character moments, but a lot of tonight's emotional beats felt unearned. Both kisses in particular struck me as either unnecessary or forced.
Indeed.
And I was going to say to that, I think David is kind of right. And I think especially in the sense of how miniature everything felt, I kind of felt like they put too many in here. Like if we focused on two of these or three, whereas there were like, what, four or five different little stories kind of popping around back and forth with multiple characters. I don't know.
I know why. It was the director of this episode was George Lucas.
Oh, that's right. The sand was coarse and it gets everywhere and into my boner and my ass.
Yeah. As everyone makes out.
Rolls around in flowers.
That's it.
Next, David Earle. Yeah. Aaron backing up Rick's Braveheart speech was definitely needed for the fighting pussies of Alexandria.
Is that a unit? Is that a designation?
The fighting
second
Irish.
Battalion out of the fighting pussies of Alexandria. Yeah. How you guys doing?
Spencer, hokey speech of the year candidate in response to, I'm going to die tomorrow, but this fat guy can't see his family starve today. He just wanted that booze, though.
Mm-hmm. Good
That's
shit,
it.
David. Good shit.
Mr. Drunky. Michael Claudio, I don't trust Ron and his, please teach me how to shoot. I'm sure he only wants to learn this to kill Carl.
Yeah. And I think that's a good summary of kind of where we landed on that.
Mm-hmm. Treacherous little snake. Next, Karen Eagle Eye Lomas. No, Rick. I'm with you, Matthew. I'm still rooting for Richone. Oh, and where's the wolf?
I think I know where Carol is. Fucking Guantanamo Bay with the wolf.
Oh, my God. Yeah, just working him with a baseball bat down there.
Awesome.
Oh, my God. Yeah, fucking
Teddy
Morgan
fucking
better.
Ball game. Over the monster on the Lansdowne Street.
Out of the park. Dennis Boersma. The beginning was weird with Rick shouting that everybody needs to be quiet from now on.
I didn't even think about that. That's funny shit. It's like we were saying, the whisper, people who whisper, but they're actually just talking.
Yeah. And not only, I think he pointed out too, of like shouting at everyone to be quiet and stay out of sight. And then he's standing on the top of the fence, just spitting on walkers, essentially.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's good stuff. Damaris Perez. The whole Sam
Damaris
not wanting...
Perez. You may now continue.
No Maria this week.
That's okay. We can say Damaris Perez. Okay, go ahead.
The whole Sam not wanting to come downstairs is just setting it up for Carol to come in with her own cookies and tell him to man the fuck up like she always does with him.
Yes. Nobody else said that. That's a great comment.
Oh, Carol, I just can't get through to him. Get out of the way.
Yeah. Sit over there.
All right, next, Jamie Lomas. I'm getting really bored with Deanna and her stupid frown all the time. Look, you want to live? Great, pull your weight around here. You want to die? There's a nice mosh pit of zombies outside the walls. Just climb up to the watchtower and dive right in. I don't care what you do, just get on with it.
Boy, that really echoes the way I feel. That's good shit, Jamie.
So she's got to make a fucking choice.
Let me say this one. Remy Levetois.
Ooh, sexy French accent. Bon. Even though I don't think he is French at all. But bon.
No, he's Canadian. I don't know if that means, well, he's French. Maybe he's French Canadian. I don't know.
Quebecois.
Oh, bon. Bon. Good shit. Of the sci-fi movie podcasts.
Ooh.
And he's all fancy now. He's part of a network, the same network that does the Walking Dead cast, actually. I think it's called Podcastica. So Rem making alliances and shit.
Nice. Well, he says, why is there no town meeting about how to reduce the walker population or lead some of it away? Oh, right, that'd require logic, and logic doesn't make for exciting TV. that is true. Got to be thinking about reducing them numbers somehow.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. It's kind of like they didn't address it yet. Like, they just kind of put it on the back burner for now. It's a good point if you think about all the worry they had about that horde not reaching Alexandria, and now that half of them are here, 20 deep, by the way, I think is what Rick said.
Yep.
You might want to be like, all right, versus the we're all going to survive speech, we might want to say, hey, what are we going to do? But yeah. maybe Rick does answer that when he says the walls are going to hold, but are you, you know, like he's... Maybe he's convinced they're going to hold. I don't know.
You're going to run to the pantry can't stay there. And steal all the crackers.
But to Rem's point, they can't stay there all fucking... They can't stay there. They're just going to attract more. That's the trick, right? All that noise will attract more. Anyway, who's next?
That is it. Next. Oh, you got to handle this name.
Mr. Bucketsa.
Magic Bucket. Syringes? Teenage slap fighting? Hypocrite kleptomaniacs. Talk about going from the sublime to the ridiculous. Last week's episode was superb. This one was necessary, I guess, but dull as fuck. Mm. Apart from the poo zombies. The poo zombies were cool.
That's awesome. Good
shit. Poo zombies were fucking cool. Tony Bellew, I think this is, he is summing it up quite nicely. Where the hell was Carol?
Yes. I'm telling exactly. you, she's making Guantanamo Bay with that wolf.
Oh, God, that would... Now, I'll admit, it would be pretty satisfying for Morgan to be like, well, all right, Rick, I gotta show you what I got down here. And he just comes in and fucking Carol is just wiping the blood off her knife. Like, oh, were you gonna fucking keep talking to this guy?
Oh, yeah, please, no shit, right?
Let that be in the next episode. All right. Last, Deborah Mercuro. I was dying laughing inside when Fatty 1 and Fatty 2, real names unimportant, were trying to steal all the food.
Yeah, I did too. When I was watching that scene, I actually went, are you fucking kidding me? Look how fat he is. He's not even that fat, but he's not like I'm starving. He's not like, you know, I'm fucking, I don't know, hiding in an attic from the Nazis thin. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. Wasting away, famished.
Yeah. Anyhow, that is the end of the listener comments. Thank you very much for playing. And now we are going to do some final thoughts. What do you think, Matthew? Have you said everything you need to say, or do you got a little bit more you want to stick on?
I mean, I think I've mostly said it. I do wish that we could have even covered some of the same ground that this episode covers, some of the same characters and their goings on, but with some of the action going on outside of the wall, because I think they can do that. I think they're relying on, no, we're picking, you know, an outside the wall or an inside the wall story, and it's going to be more slow pace versus more fast pace.
Right.
Whereas I think they could have balanced both better. I think there could have been more suspense there. I mean, I think it would have been really interesting to be revealing where, you know, reveal where Glenn is and what's going on in this episode. And, you know, we have a, you know, two, you know, maybe 4 or 5 minutes of that. And then we cut back to inside Alexandria. It slows down again. And we only get maybe two more peek-ins of what's going on with Glenn. But it would have at least answered our questions. We'd have a more fast-paced area to be jumping into. And we could have still seen some of the slower-paced, you know, inside the walls reactions and where they're how they're dealing with the horde now. I think that could have been balanced better because this episode is a slow watch. Even if you love this episode, you got to admit it's a pretty crawl of an episode.
Yeah. They're really going to milk this Glenn thing to the midseason break, dude.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're calling? You're going to call it?
I think they are, man. I think it's going to be, what are we going to do fucking next week? Are we going to do Abraham, and then we're going to do Sasha's point of view on Abraham, and then we're going to do... fucking Daryl's thing, and then it's going to be the midseason break. I mean, it's only a few weeks away, a couple weeks away, right? So I don't know, I think they're going to milk the shit out of it.
Whole milk, full of fat, all of it.
Yeah, bubbling up in that fucking bucket. But I think it's I don't know. I think that's what's going to happen. So here's my final thoughts on this episode. There's some moments that I like. And listen, I understand that Spencer is a beautiful man. He's great, great bone structure, flawless skin, and that perfect 5 o'clock shadow that makes you think he doesn't care that he's not trying to be hot and he's still hot. I understand the whole fucking thing. I get
it. But you just want his sandpaper all over your neck, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. You want a fucking rash burn from this guy. I get it. I get it, ladies and some of you fellas. But honestly, I don't care about him. I don't care. I mean, it's because I want to see more about Deanna. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I just, the whole Deanna and him thing, it needs to be anchored to one of our main characters for me to give a shit.
Yeah. And you even just saying that makes me think that if they had had maybe there could have been a small party of them that leaves before the walkers get too thick to try and, you know, rendezvous with the others. And it could have been Spencer and, you know, Rosita and, you know, a kind of even mixture of some of our newer characters and less new characters so that we have, you know, our interest wrapped up in it.
Also, if Shot by Friend Scott is back, where the fuck is Heath?
Good fucking... Is that just another character who's just unaddressed? Yeah, he's here, yes. But we didn't see him.
Yeah, where's Heath?
Fuck.
He didn't even check on Shot by Friend Scott. He's just like, oh, I don't care.
Hey, we have an interesting character storage locker that you all must file into this week. Sorry. Right. None of you can be on camera. Yeah.
Although, I gotta say, my hopes and dreams of a Black Ninja Turtles thing is really getting diminished with Scott being really, really badly wounded, because it was Scott, Michonne, Heath, and Morgan.
That's right. He'll pull through. We can make this happen.
Yeah, I think he can pull through. I think if Denise can get her shit together, she might be able to help him out.
Pull through and hand him some Psy.
Yeah. Cowabunga, motherfucker. All right, everybody, thank you for tuning into another episode of the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there, get our name out there, help us out. And you know what? Check out libertystreetgeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there, plenty to listen to: science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right, we'll see you next time.